Thanks for joining. Welcome. I hope the keynote was interesting for you. I saw the first half, but then I popped out, so hopefully I don't repeat anything here. My name is Alistair Spears. I'm a senior operations PM in the Office 365 team. My team focuses on deployment, adoption, and readiness. So we focus on a lot of the IT tasks that IT departments, partners, and consultants need to do as well. That's our big center of gravity, rather than the particular features and functions of the products themselves. But talking to IT guys all day, you have to know the product. And so this session is going to be not very technical. I really just want to talk about the product, talk about Office 365, what it does, and show you a couple of demos of some of the more interesting things that you may not have seen in the keynote or been aware as well. So just so I know who's in the audience, did anyone come to the pre-day on Sunday? Two people? Okay, great. Well, this is a little bit new content, so a little bit different. So that'll be good. Is anyone using Office 365 already? No one? Okay, great. So to kind of give you like a level set of where we think about and what we think about Office 365, we really look in the Office team. We run Office 365. We run Exchange, Project, Visio, Link, SharePoint, Exchange, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, all of those apps. And really, our kind of center of gravity is, what are the tools that you need to do your job? And what we've seen is that that changes every release, every year. Some of the oldest Office products are now 30 years old, when you think about that. Word was released the year I was born. It's kind of a scary stat. And all of these apps have been around for some time. Some of them even have that much code legacy still in the apps today. It's just been reworked, upgraded, and continued on down the path as well. And often people ask me, well, isn't this release good enough? Isn't this, surely after 30 years, you've built everything that you need to be productive? But the challenge is that the industry doesn't stay still. The way that we work doesn't stay still. And building these kind of productivity solutions means that what it means to be productive constantly changes as well. Just a couple of statistics to get you thinking about this. About 75% of organizations allow personal devices to be used for business use. Bring your own phone. It won't give you a BlackBerry anymore or anything like that. You can bring whatever phone you like. You can hook it up to the email server, copy down email, and those sorts of things. But only 24% of organizations actually have a policy in place around how to enforce that, how to manage that, what's allowed on the phone, what's not allowed on the phone. And as this has started to roll out, there's been some very interesting challenges. One of the things that we can do with an Exchange mailbox is that when you connect your phone, you have the ability actually to remote wipe the phone as the IT department. So you can wipe everything on that phone and reset it to essentially a blank phone, which is great if you lose your phone and it has confidential information on it or something like that. It's bad when you leave the company and all of your family photos get wiped off your phone as well. So that's why some of these policies are becoming more and more challenging. 49% of work requires people to work with other people. About 80% of employees are actually ineffective at collaborating. We have all of these tools, we have all this work, but we still have a lot of meetings, we waste a lot of time, people don't do things that they're told to do, people don't ask the right people. And sometimes you just bump into someone in the hallway and you've never met them before, and they've been working in your organization, your team, for 3 years, and they may even be doing something very similar to you. So big organizations and very dynamic organizations have a lot of challenges with just sharing that information. In terms of compliance, in the US alone, 10,000 new regulations in the last 5 years. And 93% of employers admit to violating their own company's compliance policies. That's kind of a challenge. I won't ask anyone to admit if they've violated their own compliance policies, but show of hands, who's read their HR manual in the last 2 years? Anyone? One guy, yeah. The parts on the wall, right? Yeah. So, we're not even aware of these compliance issues and those sorts of things. It just doesn't bubble up. 40% is the amount of information that grows every year. But 62% of us self-identify and say that we just can't make sense of all that information. We have more and more big data. We just don't know how to make sense of it. And kind of meanwhile, in IT, where I live, we spend a lot of our time, a lot of our budget, just running the service, just keeping the lights on. This is a study by Gartner. 63% of IT budgets went to running it, 37% went to growing and transforming the business. Exactly, yeah. I'm pretty sure this isn't the industry standard. I think it's much higher. But, and that's the role of Office 365. The role of Office 365 is to help IT shift that balance back, move away from those expensive grunt tasks that just aren't rewarding in any way, and move on to the things that actually evolve the business, that make a difference to the business. I think the Aston Martin case study was really interesting in the keynote, where the IT manager said that he wanted to get out of being a support function and into the strategy department. And you can see, you know, how they approach IT in that manner. And when we think about the role of IT and we look at frameworks like ITIL or something like that, you know, there are a lot of roles, and a lot of roles will change as we start to adopt Office 365 and those sorts of things as well. I like to call out these roles as the ones that become even more important, the strategy roles, roles around continual service improvement rather than just patch management, and around service design, capability design, really understanding what your organization wants, what your users want, and managing the various suppliers that can deliver that for you as well. Roles like service operation, you know, incident management, event management, take a step back. They're not as important in an Office 365 world where you're just buying an SLA and you're managing a vendor or a supplier to deliver that SLA to you, rather than managing the minute details of a hardware failure or a server on fire or something like that in the data center as well. So that brings us to Office, and where we are, you know, in Office, we really aim to design these Office productivity apps that are for everyone. When we look at what that means today, it means the tools to do your best work across all the devices that you think are important. You know, once upon a time, we just built apps for PCs and Macs. We never only just built PC apps. We always had a Mac release. The first release of Office was actually on the Mac. The Office for Windows came much later. But we've always been trying to make sure that we're on the tools to do your best work. And now that extends to tablets and phones, web browsers, and all manner of different devices. Who knows what it'll be in another 5 years. Maybe it'll be wristwatches. Maybe it'll be magical glasses. We're just not sure yet. But, you know, the tools that you use to do your job and the technology that you'll use will constantly evolve. At the same time, for IT, we need a way to manage all of that stuff. We need a way to centrally manage that stuff and consolidate down the management of all those different technologies to make it much more simple for us as well. So I don't want to ramble on too much more, but instead I want to jump across and show you some demonstrations of what Office 365 is. Okay, I have an iPad here. So this is an iPad. You may have seen them before. It's not my favorite tablet, but it's a tablet that a lot of people cover, that carry as well. And one of the interesting things about the iPad is that it has a relatively full-featured browser. And one of the great things about Office 365 and one of the ways we enable you to work on all of your devices is just directly through the browser as well. So you can see here I'm browsing a SharePoint site. I can go into the admin portal here if I like and see all the different workloads. Of course, no Ethernet connector for the iPad, so you just wait for the Wi-Fi to kick in. And I think it's logging me out. Yeah. Well, this is a feature as well. Nice, hard password to guess. It is HTML5, jQuery, JSON. We used to use a little bit of Silverlight, but we've removed pretty much all of that now, so it's a fully cross-browser experience. We actually work really closely with Apple on there are certain things in Safari browser that traditionally didn't work with the web apps, so we've been working with them on a while now to make sure that they could add a couple of the JavaScript elements we needed Safari to support to give a rich HTML5 experience for the web apps as well. So this is the admin portal inside of Office 365. One of the interesting things about this, and one of the things I like about it, is it kind of just shows you all of the different pieces inside of Office 365. Exchange, Exchange Online Protection, which is a mail filtering application. The identity service, essentially your directory of users that you manage. Link, our video chat, voice chat, and IM software. Office 365 portal itself, Office itself. You can see here I have Power BI, and I'll talk about that in a little bit later. Rights Management Service, SharePoint, and Yammer Enterprise as well. One of the interesting things they showed in the keynote was SkyDrive Pro. But one of the great things about HTML5 and building a really responsive system is that when we're on different devices, we actually want to make even the web pages much more touch optimized. So if we detect that you're on a tablet, we'll actually deliver you a much different looking SharePoint experience. So let me go across to here. This is what SkyDrive Pro looks like when you connect to it from an iPad. There's the traditional desktop optimized one where we lay out all the desktop features nice and easy. But the last thing you want to do, you know, when you have big fat fingers and a keyboard and mouse, is try to hit those tiny little targets with your finger as well. So we make it much easier, much bigger buttons to click and those sorts of things. And you can see I can and go through and work with this very easily as well. The same is true for Outlook. And what you can see here in Outlook is the Outlook web app experience optimized for iPad. So I can scroll around here, I can look into this information, I can click in, you can see I've sent an email to myself here. Today I'm playing the role of Katie Jordan. all of our demo accounts are actually named after real Microsoft people, so there's a person in engineering that's far more famous than she thinks she is because of all these demonstrations. So this is an example of the LinkedIn app. And like the app model that they talked about in the keynote, the app model works across platforms as well. So you can see it here, bringing up, identifying me, bringing back a picture, all running because it's all based on HTML5 and JavaScript. So that's great. It's great for a web app experience, but we also still want real apps on these platforms as well. And you know, a lot of people ask me, when is Office coming to the iPad? When is Office coming to the iPad? The reality is it's been there for quite a while. You can see, even just connecting to the web app here, I get an annoying pop-up to say, hey, wouldn't you rather be using the real app? So let's close here, jump out of that, and go across. You know, this is just some of the apps that we have available on iPads and iPhones today. So to jump into one that is kind of interesting is this OWA app here. Now, OWA is short for Outlook Web Access. We've actually built an app for the iPad and the iPhone and Android called OWA for iPhone, OWA for iOS, OWA for Android. And there's a subtle difference in what's going on here. The app is still HTML5, it's still built in HTML, but when we package it up and deliver it as an app that you can buy for free out of the App Store, we can do some interesting things. What we can start to do with the installed app is we can start to take advantage of some of the native features of the device. We can start to look at things like, let's take the content offline. So even though this is an HTML5 app, the data is actually cached offline on the machine itself. We can also take advantage of things like the camera. So if we want to take advantage of the camera, you can't do that just through a web app and those sorts of things. We also take advantage of the notification screen. So when your phone buzzes, you have an upcoming calendar appointment, even though you're not synchronized down to the calendar app inside of iPad and iPhone, you still get the calendar announcement. You can open up this app, and you can treat it as if it was a native app. Yeah. It's a HTML5 app that has native bits. So it has... It's not using the browser. It's using the full screen, but it's using the browser rendering to render it all of the interface here. What's going on behind the scenes is that there's some back-end code to make sure that the browser can talk to... or the app itself can show up the browser, but then take information out of the browser and put it into the iOS APIs, like the notification screen. No, this is custom Objective-C handler written on the device. Yeah, so even though the 90% of the app is based on HTML5, that last 10% really depends on the device, because on iPad, it's the native support of the hardware. On Android, it's the native support in the hardware. Windows Phone, Windows, they all have different APIs to talk to, different device styles. So there is an element of customizing it for each device. We want to make sure that this experience is the same on all these devices as well. So this is Owa for iPad. This is the name of this particular app as well. For administrators, and I showed you before, you can go in and you can actually see the health dashboard very easily as well. We also have an app for the health dashboard as well. So I can log in again, and everything's expired. I thought I'd be really smart and get in here early and log everything in. So you can see here, this app is just really to give you a quick status notification of the health of your service as well here. You can swipe across and see if there are any maintenance windows coming up. And again, with this app, like the Owa app, you can get alerts. So if something goes wrong with your particular instance of Office 365, you can get notified. You can see that something's working on it as well. So you can see here, Exchange Online has an arrow. And we have a whole spotter's guide at what all these arrows mean. But this particular arrow means it's a service degradation. Not a full outage, but something's going on. We can drill into that. We can see all the components within Exchange here. Management and provisioning, the email, timely delivery of email, the sign-in experience, and the voicemail experience. They're all up, but something with management and provisioning is down, so we can even click into that one more level. We can actually read the issue here. So in this case, there is something wrong with setting up rules and policies in Exchange. It's taking a little bit longer than it should. If you're doing some particular action, and it can tell you when this issue will be resolved as well. So this is kind of an example of that constant information that you need to have to run the service. But it's, again, delivered as an app, so you can get it on all the platforms that you want to use. You don't have to default back to the web environment. And that's really powerful for a number of reasons. On the phone, if you imagine the first thing you do in the morning, you wake up. If you're like me, you open this app. You're like, is it a good day or a bad day? Whereas you don't have to wait for the users to call you or the issues to be raised or those sorts of things. You can see at a glance view of how your environment is functioning. There are a bunch of other apps that we have here as well. SkyDrive Pro, RMS, SkyDrive, the OneNote app, remote desktop clients, and all sorts of other things as well. Now, if I jump across to this device, there we go. I'm always so happy when these things work. We have like a dongle connected to a dongle, connected to another dongle, connected to this device up here that's simultaneously splitting one signal to that PC, to that screen, and then the guy at the back is recording. So the fact this is working at all is kind of a small miracle. And again, a lot of different apps on the iPhone as well, some of the same apps that I mentioned earlier. What I do want to show you here is the Office mobile experience on the iPhone. So this, again, is that rich environment that we saw in the keynote. To jump across, to open up particular decks or something like that. Oops, press the wrong button. We can jump across, open up particular presentations here, look at that, and have that all rendered in the phone itself. So we never have to be without our documents. Even though it's stored in the cloud, it's stored in Office 365. Gets synchronized to all my different devices. So even if I'm offline, I can still get work done. I can still continue to work as well. This is a particularly big spreadsheet, but I just wanted to open it up to show you what a 10 megabyte spreadsheet looks like on a phone. I know there's all sorts of other spreadsheet apps that you can get for iPhones and Android devices and those sorts of things. Not many that will handle a 10 meg spreadsheet, and definitely not many that will give you the same fidelity as the other devices as well. See lots of interesting content here. And one of the things that we often grapple with when we build these sorts of apps is, what's the right experience for these devices? I mean, are you ever going to sit on your phone and do high-end spreadsheet calculations or any of those sorts of things? Probably not. So we want to optimize this experience for viewing. We want to make sure that this viewing experience is really powerful, that you can see charts, you can see graphs, you can see all that information, and that you see the same calculations. You're never likely to fill out your budget from your phone. You're probably a little more likely maybe to do it from an iPad. But by and large, if you're an Excel junkie, you want a keyboard and mouse, not just any keyboard. You want a keyboard with a full number pad and power clicks, and a mechanical keyboard and those sorts of things as well. So let's jump back to VGA. Now back here in the SkyDrive app, we can open any of these apps as well. Let me just show you some of the improvements we've made to the Word web app experience. So I'm going to open this document now. And what you can see here is a rich, full fidelity experience of looking at this app as well. It's also touch enabled. So even though this is a browser experience for Word, it is touch enabled, so I can just swipe with my fingers, zoom in. I get that full functionality through this environment as well. Going into edit mode, and I'll just edit in the web app here. What you'll be able to see is that full experience again. Full fonts as well. This is something that, you know, allow me just a little bit of time to geek out here. Calibri Lite is not a web safe font. So if you've ever done any web pages, you'll know that if you don't use the right fonts on different PCs, different devices, they'll show up completely different if the font's not installed. So what we've actually done here in the web apps is that every single character we actually render as a separate image, which is a pretty interesting thing to be able to do. So every font that you see looks the exact same on all the PCs, devices, Macs, iPhones, iPads that you access it on, because the full fidelity of your document is very important. You spend all of your time making these perfect-looking documents. The last thing you want it to do is skew and look completely different to different people. So we made that kind of small change in the background that every single letter of every single font is actually rendered as an image. But of course, that'd have downsides. If you did that, then you couldn't really copy and paste it. So instead, what we do is, as you highlight, we've actually embedded the character behind every single character as well. So you can copy and paste, and you don't even notice that's going on. It just looks like a very high-fidelity document operating in the browser as well. So let's stop that, and let's jump to a proper PC, and let's have a look at that same spreadsheet that I was looking at earlier. Yes. It's the same spreadsheet I was looking at earlier. Now, they showed a whole bunch of really hardcore PowerView things and all those fancy things you can do in Excel. But I just want to show you some of the really basic things that make a great experience in Excel. And these are some of the new things we've added as well. One of the things that I really like to do, I'm by no means an Excel power user, but I look at a lot of spreadsheets, and sometimes it just all looks like gobbledygook to me. I want to actually make sense of it. I want to see it visually. I want to see it in a chart or a pivot table or something like that. Who's a pivot table user? We should all be hardcore project managers, so everyone will know their pivot tables. But one of the things that I really like to do is just being able to select content like that. And you see this little icon here in Excel 2013. And what this allows you to do is it brings you a quick analysis lens. And what this quick analysis lens does is just allows you to see things at a glance, look at different things in the interface. And these could be buried in the ribbon somewhere in the interface. So if you're a power user, you're probably familiar with all of these features and those sorts of things. But then just by mousing over the selection that I've made, and then even giving me pivot table examples of that content as I mouse over it, is a really powerful thing as well. So let's get some more data here. So let's get megawatts. And this particular spreadsheet, I'm actually looking at power stations around the US. So if I jump across to charts here, now that it's actually got data in it, you can see that I can just at a glance go through and see which sort of chart would look best for this particular information and insert it into my document. Or just mouse over it, have a look at it, and send it on its way. You know, in many cases, we don't actually want to edit this spreadsheet and make it look better. We just love a quick visual of what that data actually means. You know, can we pull an insight out of that really quick without having to worry about it as well? Jump over to tables here. And you can see, again, different tables that are optimized here as well. So that's great when you have a lot of information. But there's some really powerful things that you can do with Excel and Office 365 as well. One of the new things that you may see in my Excel bar is this map. What this map does is allows me to look at this information on a map. And this is some collaboration that the Office team did with the Bing team, with the Bing Maps and some of those capabilities as well. And what Bing provides this environment is a huge cloud service that knows the location of pretty much everything in the world. And so without having to provide GPS coordinates or anything like that, we can just say, hey, this is a state, county, plant name, just build me a map. And so if I jump into this now, I've got this one open. So let's do this. What I'll do, launch Power Map. Here's one I prepared earlier. And what I can do now, and I'm sorry, I have to change the resolution just a bit. But if I just close that down. What I can do now is start to build graphical charts of all this information. I've annotated these charts. I've put a little bit more information on them. I can start to treat Excel like PowerPoint in this particular case. And so you saw PowerView earlier and some of the things that you can do with PowerView. This is another feature of Power BI. It's called Power Map. And what's great about this is that I can play a tour of that particular information. And I can build this really interactive ways of looking at those boring spreadsheets. And I can do all sorts of interesting things and gain new insights into this information. So if you imagine I was trying to talk to someone about, hey, what does the energy capacity of the US look like? I can start to do things like this. Well, look at all the varied energy sources across the US. Natural gas is obviously pretty huge. There's a lot of capacity there across the US. And I can just treat this like a presentation. If we advance a bit, I can drill down into the Pacific Northwest. And obviously in the Pacific Northwest, we have a lot of rain, we have a lot of water, we have a lot of hydroelectricity. And you can see the big spikes there. And that's actually where we have some of our Office 365 data centers. The south, what would you expect? Natural gas. So a lot of natural gas down there as well. And as we move in, we'll be able to see the coal belt of the Appalachians and those sorts of things as well. So just a really interesting way of looking at that information on a map. We can also start to look at that information on a map over time. And so look, this is just that same spreadsheet that I saw you graphed on the map, built a report on it, and we can show you kind of the rise from the 1911 all the way today. See, hydropower was huge. Soon you'll see this big spike of fuel oil. Then we have the kind of coal belt here, and then the natural gas all kick in. So just a much more interesting way of just looking at any data you have. When you think about the sorts of information you have, where your customers are, customers over time, whether you're looking at things like, anything you have that has a location, any street address, any package, any office, any like employee location or anything like that, we can do some really interesting things with this as well. Okay. This is inside Excel. This is called Power Map. Not yet, yeah, but it will, we're getting there. So this is just an Excel. It's one of those things that, you know, is through the power of Office. It's connected to the cloud. It's connected to the web in this environment. It's still in a preview right now. You can export it to a video file. And so then you can embed that video file in something else or put it to the web, and those sorts of things as well. But just a really interesting feature to have there. And you can see my data set here is nothing special. I just have a whole bunch of cells. I don't even have the exact street address of that particular area. I just have the state, county, plant name, and Bing's finding out the rest, and taking the Excel data and plotting it on that map as well. So your data is never going up into Bing or anything like that. It's just using the Bing service to query those results and then mapping it all locally as well. But there are some interesting things we can do with Office 365 and data. This spreadsheet is stored in Office 365. It's on my SkyDrive, or what we soon call OneDrive. And so what we can do inside of Office 365 is we have a new feature called Q&A. And what this Q&A feature allows us to do is just use the power of SharePoint, the power of SharePoint Online, and use our natural language search to bring back information. So I have a few saved queries here already. I just want to show you kind of what this looks like when you use it as well. So we have plenty of spreadsheets. If I showed you my SkyDrive, you'd see all sorts of different spreadsheets, unrelated in any way. Some of them are about work stuff. Some of them are about home stuff. Some of them are about all sorts of different things. But what Q&A does is it takes all that information, it indexes it, and it tries to work out kind of a point of view about that particular data. So once it has a point of view, once it indexes that, you can essentially just ask it questions. So I can say, what was Australia's medal tally in 2004? I should actually probably just refresh. Oh, there we go. So what you can see under that, you know, you can see that Office 365 is taking that question, it's translating that into somewhere it understands, it's picking up the important points. So it's saying, all right, what he's really meant to say was show medal count where area is Australia and year is 2004. We won 49 medals at the Olympics in that year. What about Australia's medal? Say Australia tally versus China in 2008. Show continent where year is 2008 and area is China. Okay, not so great. Let's do it again. Let's say Australia, China, medals. Give me a list. Let's say by event. And let's say a map. So all of this stuff here is being built real time. The Bing service is translating what I'm typing there. I have this information in a spreadsheet. The spreadsheet is just the information itself. And we're essentially being able to do those Power View, those Power BI things on the fly as well. So I have all sorts of different information here. Let's look at swimming medals by country map. Give it a sec, it'll plot. Okay. Let's do it one more time. Let's say Australian. This is another feature that's in preview. but it's just a really powerful feature. And so when you think about this, when you think about that kind of amount of information you have, I've got some other surveys that we've prepared earlier. We've saved them. We can save some of those queries themselves. So here you can see show GDP for India, China, and US by year. So I can save that query, and I can share that query out with people. So if you imagine that you're in the PMO or you're in the data team, and you always get asked for all of these ad hoc queries and ad hoc reports, it takes you 2 hours. Maybe you open up your analysis services cube and generate a spreadsheet and tell them the answer. In this approach, you can send them here. They'll type it in. They won't be able to work it out. And so then you go, okay, I'll type it in. I'll save that query, and I'll send you the link. It's kind of like the people that constantly ask those questions that they can really find in the search engine until you send them the result of the search engine with the query string in it. I don't know. Is that just me? So a really powerful tool, all built into Office 365 and all the capability here as well. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Well, if you're at Microsoft, you'll search Bing. So that's just a quick demo. There's a lot of different things you can add into Office 365. So when you think about this core cloud service that has no build time for any of these things, all of a sudden you can turn on SharePoint Online, you can turn on Exchange Online, you can turn on Project, Visio, this BI capabilities without having to do any architecture work, any design, buy any servers, or any of those sorts of things. And there's a whole lot of different capabilities in Office 365. I'll skip through this. I think you've seen Project Online now, and you've got the point. I showed you some of the BI things that you can do inside of Office 365. Data loss prevention, we talked about in the keynote very rarely as well. This is kind of an archiving feature that allows you to search for key things. Maybe it's credit card numbers, maybe it's driver's licenses, maybe it's social security numbers, all sorts of things. Anything that you can build a regular expression around, you can find in this case as well. What's also interesting with this data loss prevention capability, we're now introducing the capability to actually fingerprint documents. So if you have a particular document, a template, maybe it's a patent design template, maybe it's a non-disclosure agreement, maybe it's a legal contract or something like that, that you don't want your employees to be emailing around, you actually load up that document into this data loss prevention engine. It will scan it and fingerprint that document template. So when it sees documents like that traverse through email, it can do any number of actions to it. You can stop it, you can encrypt it, you could refer it to their manager for the manager to approve sending of that email, and all those sorts of things as well. So it's just another way for you to get control back in your environment and control the data leakage in your environment as well. Of course, it's no good to capture all that information, to record all that information, to have all this storage, to have all these rules, if you can't actually enforce it and view it and those sorts of things as well. So now in Office 365, we have this unified e-discovery capability that spans SharePoint, Project Online, Exchange, and Link. So if you want to search any of those capabilities, you can look across that complete data set and bring that together in an e-discovery library. So this is useful for a number of reasons. If you're a lawyer or in the legal compliance team and you need to find out information about a particular product, you can run this search, pass it off to your lawyers or something like that. Or you can just put a hold on all of these different topics here. So in this case, what I'm looking for is look for an investor that's within 30 characters of relations or financial. So I want to look for financial investors, investor relations through this audit. I can set my parameters. I want to search these people's mailboxes, these SharePoint sites, or I can just search everything, and then it'll go out of that and bring me back all this information. This is essential legal discovery. When you look at court cases, and if you're in the legal profession, legal discovery is actually quite an expensive exercise. Often it's just an arbitrage between the opposing counsels. The judge has to rule that, all right, you're only allowed to bring back 5,000 documents. They must be within the last 30 days. They must be in this format or something like that. Otherwise, you could just do legal discovery forever, and it would cost everyone, you know, $400 or $500 an hour. So instead, with a tool like this, you can just quickly scan it. You can get those instant statistics as well. So you can say, all right, there are 5,000 different documents that cover that particular compliance case. So if we want to do that, we're going to discover that group, or maybe we can refine our search a little bit more. Maybe we want to discover something that's this project name related to these users, sent to these people within this timeline. It gives us all that information. We see the results of those queries as well. And we also have the capability to then export all of those results into HTML. So we can hand off. You know, when you think about lawyers, often you'll have your internal legal compliance team. But then outside of that, you may have an outside counsel that's actually the person that does the heavy legal work. They're not the person. It's not your legal department that goes to court for you. It's the lawyer, the attorney that they bring in to represent you and represent the whole company. That person may not have SharePoint, that person may not have Exchange, that person may not be sophisticated enough to trawl through a PST file to look at all those emails. So instead, what you can do here is A, either grant them access to this site and have them just go through the website and review the content, or B, just export it all to HTML as one big HTML blog. Then they can open it up on whatever device that picks their fancy, and they can review all that information very easily as well. Really powerful feature that's included here as well. Office apps, we talked a lot about. And Office Click to Run, we mentioned very briefly as well. And this is the new capability inside of Office 365 that allows our client applications to be managed and deployed from Office 365. So it's still a native app. It's still an app that's running on your PC. What's actually going on is that the Office app is constantly checking back with the cloud to make sure that there's nothing new, there's no more information, there's no more patches available. And it's streaming down those patches in the background as well. So essentially what that means is that you don't have to worry about patching your Office clients anymore. You can turn them all on and let them go like that. Or you can control it a little bit more tightly and say, well, I want them to check this location on my server, those particular changes, and I'm just going to download those cloud patches whenever they're available as well. It's a much more streamlined approach for Office. It also has the benefit of being able to run side by side. So if you have an old version of Project, you have Project 2003, you want to use Project 2013 as well for a separate project or talking to a separate set of project servers, you can use the side-by-side capabilities here and run both apps at the same time without getting a conflict that we always used to get as well. So all this is delivered, you know, from our enterprise cloud. So this is, you know, our globally redundant data centers. And for those of you that were with us on Sunday, I think I spent about an hour talking about this. I kind of got a little sidetracked, so I won't this time. But it's a really expensive investment to build all of these data centers. When we first started doing presentations like this, we used to say it's a $1 billion investment. Last year, it was a $2 billion investment. Now, it's a $3 billion plus investment. You know, building these sort of data centers is very expensive, but it's very worthwhile. When you have hundreds of millions of users using it, the economy of scale is just fantastic. We also need the network to run it. And Microsoft's been lucky. We've been around 30 years. We've had a lot of consumer services, like Hotmail, like Xbox, like MSN. Once upon a time, we had a web TV solution. And all these things required us to buy a lot of bandwidth and a lot of fiber, so much so now that we're actually the third largest fiber optic network in the world that just links all of Microsoft's data centers together with organizations that peer with us as well. So it's all this fiber that's allowing us to have a really fast connection. Yeah? Yeah.
Hardware is changing, becoming more usable, better, faster.
Yeah, that's a great point. So the question was, you know, how do we keep up with all the changes in hardware? It's constantly getting better, it's constantly getting more efficient, and those sorts of things. And the good answer is that we don't. We abstract away from it. So for Office 365, we don't worry about any of that. We have a team that worries about the hardware, worries about the design and those sorts of things. So much so now that when we go to our, we call them the Global Foundation Services team. Global Foundation Services team are the ones that build our data centers, manage the Global Foundation network, and those sorts of things as well. But they've trained us pretty well to not ask for servers anymore. And now we ask for megawatts. We go to them and say, hey, we need this many users, we need this much computing power, this many megawatts. And then it's up to them to optimize the most efficient way of delivering us that amount of power. And that amount of electricity as well. Then there's, of course, standards for all those technologies. So they manage the hardware. They just look at how much computing power can we get out of these devices. And that's essentially what we look at there. So solid-state drives, hard drives, archiving, backups, and those sorts of things. We try and step back from that and just manage at an abstracted level and then let the other teams worry about those layers. And they don't worry about whatever the software is doing. We're just the customer. Compliance, security, automation, we can talk on and on about any of these issues. If there are any specific questions about any of these things, happy to take them now. We can move on. All right. Licensing. So I thought, you know, a lot of people think licensing is this big scary beast. It's really hard to understand. It's complicated. It's challenging. The reality is for Office 365, it's actually really, really easy, depending on who you are. One of the more complicated things for Office 365 is that it's an umbrella name that we use on a lot of different things. There's a copy of Office 365 that you can buy in the shops as a home user. There's Office 365 for small business that kind of assumes that you don't have a dedicated IT team. There's Office 365 for mid-sized businesses, enterprise businesses. Then there's some specific things we do for government and education as well with specific needs. I just want to focus on the mid-size and the enterprise ones today, because that's a really simple discussion. It's a photo opportunity. So, and all these slides will be available after the fact as well. So for Office 365 Enterprise, we're expecting an IT department, the use of enterprise-grade features, and different users having different needs. So if you're an organization that has an IT department, that has a good IT department, that needs some of these enterprise capabilities, and you have users that have different use cases, you're going to need Office 365 Enterprise. Office 365 Enterprise is divided up into a lot of different things. Depending on what users want what, there's different things with a different price point. The K SKUs are what we call a kiosk worker. So this is someone like a factory line worker, a traveling person, or a non-computer user that doesn't really sit at a computer every day. In Australia, we had a lot of mines, a lot of mining companies. What they looked at K1 for was they just wanted to provide people an email address and a sign-in and HR forms so that people could log onto a portal, see their HR forms, sign off on them, apply for leave, and then read email as well. K1 costs about $2 a month. So that's the low end there. For the customers that I work with, that was actually cheaper than posting out the monthly pay packet. So that's essentially just how they justified it. They were replacing their postage costs with that solution. On the other side of the equation, you have the E-SKUs, which are really your core information workers or enterprise SKUs, all the way up to E4. Now, E4 is the most expensive SKU. It costs something in the range of $24 per month. It includes the full office. It includes all the capabilities. It includes a 50 gig mailbox. It includes 25 gigs of cloud storage per user, as well as another allocation of storage for SharePoint itself. It includes the Office web apps. It includes the Office mobile apps. It includes the Office tablet apps. And it includes Office itself. E4 also includes the rights to run a Link server on premises as well. So if you want to set up Link and you want to have PABX integration, that's integration with your desk phone, E4 can provide all of that to you as well. E3 is generally the kind of core thing that we look at. That's the everything packet. The difference between E3 and E4 is the ability to use enterprise voice on premises. That's the only difference. So if you're talking about the cloud-only capabilities, all of those capabilities are in E3. E1, so E3 is in the range of, what, $18 these days? Yeah, it's around that. And of course, it depends how you buy it. If you buy it through volume license and you're buying thousands of copies at a time or thousands of users at a time, you're going to get a cheaper rate than kind of the retail rate and those sorts of things. But that's where the discussion gets complicated. Licensing model is simple. The licensing negotiations can get more complicated. And then E1. E1 is the cheaper enterprise SKU. That's generally around $8 a month. With that, you get SharePoint, Exchange, Link, Office web apps, all running in the browser, and so on. It doesn't include the Office client apps in that case as well. So the smart people out there, you say, hey, what happened to E2? You've gone from E1, E3, E4. We used to have another offering that was essentially like E1, except it was only viewing the documents, not viewing and creating. About 12 months ago, we added the ability to view and create into the bottom line SKU, and we just took out that E2 SKU altogether. So that's where it went. Again, the K SKU, the difference is, do you have web apps? Do you want them to be able to edit the web apps in the browser? And those sorts of things as well. So that's the model. Now, the great thing about the enterprise model is you can mix and match all of these things. You may have some users that want everything, that want the rich Office client, some users that are happy with whatever they have, they want some of the more basic features, or some users that, you know, they're really getting an IT asset for the first time, and then they don't even have that IT hardware. They're just sharing a kiosk in a lunchroom or something like that to do tasks. Yeah? Sure. So the development tools are all separate to this. So Visual Studio is charged separate to this. All of these environments can be customized. It is the same environment. You just have the same SharePoint environment. It's just the costing model is per user. Yeah, so there's a tool called, that used to be called Napa. Yeah. It was the preview of editing. That's a free tool. And it's part of MSDN subscription. So that's a free preview you can add into any enterprise tenant. Another important thing for you to note, if you're looking at Project Online, if you're looking at Power BI or any of those other capabilities, they come into play in the enterprise suite. So the enterprise one is the most customizable. My guidance to you, if you're here at a Microsoft conference, you're sophisticated enough that you'll want the enterprise offerings. The mid-size offering is similar but different in subtle ways. Best way to think of the mid-size offering is that it's a price point offer for a certain size of customer that's a little bit bigger than 10 users, but not yet ready for that full IT environment as well. This is the case where you may have two or three people in your IT department. They're IT generalists that stretch across the board, and so you don't want some of that richer capability. You can't manage that richer capability. You don't have your Exchange architects and engineers and those sorts of things on staff to be able to help. So this is the mid-size business offering as well. 6 months ago, I would have told you never to buy this offer, just to be quite frank. You know, if you're here and you wanted customizations, you'd go for the enterprise plans. Even if this one was a little bit cheaper, it would be very hard. You can't add project to this SKU. You can't add Power BI. You can't add, you know, some of those kiosk users to this one. It's a very small set offer. It's good for everyone. Everyone has the exact same offer in this case. That's changed. Now we have the ability to change between these SKUs as well, which is something different. So if you do choose M, you can always decide against it later and change to a different SKU. But generally, E is the SKU, and then it's just a matter of how much functionality do you want, where do you fall on the price spectrum and the capability spectrum as well. We do constantly add things to these SKUs in different ways, weird and wonderful ways. I was just updating this deck. It used to say 25 gigs per mailbox. We doubled all that. Now it's 50 gigs per mailbox and those sorts of things as well. Generally, we target the E3 offer as being the everything offer. Everything that we do accrues to E3. And then for E1, it's the capabilities that are that are more basic or make the most sense as well. You can buy any of these pieces standalone as well. So if you just want Exchange or you just want SharePoint, you just want Link, you can do that as well. And essentially behind the scenes, that is the same thing as one of these eSKUs, just with the other capabilities turned off. So my advice, if you're trying it or you're piloting it, start with the eSKU, start with E3, see what you've got for everything, and then you can work out what you actually need as you trial it more and those sorts of things as well. So in terms of Office 365 Pro Plus, you know, this is a fancy way to say the client app, Office 2013, as we used to call it. The reason it's not called Office 2013 is that when you have Office 365, the Office client is updating itself every month. So it's no longer Office 2013. It's actually Office 2014. You know, it's actually Office 2014 January right now. It'll be Office 2013 February soon. Then it'll be March, and so on and so on. Whereas the Office 2013 product is actually referring to a point in time back when we released it as well. Generally, we don't add new features into the client applications. Service packs, updates, they do bug fixes, and they fix certain things. And so they're kind of locked on what functionality is in them at a particular time. When you have Office 365, when you're getting your Office client from the cloud, you're actually getting that monthly update built into the service. So as we change something, perhaps in the service, we want to change it in the client so the client can take advantage of those capabilities. And it's updated along the way as well. Question?
Yeah, sorry for all the questions.
That's all right. Yeah.
I'm not familiar with all the different versions. You have the Office web app.
Yeah.
That's like taking Excel out.
Sure.
You have the web app, you have the professional, and you have the Pro
Plus. Yep.
So
the web app runs in the web, runs in the browser. That's HTML5 app. These apps are client apps. These are a client Windows app or a client Mac app that you'll install on your PC itself. So it is the full Office in this case. The web apps are the web Office. The main difference. Yeah. They are. I mean, but you know, our web apps team doesn't come to work saying, I'm going to build the second best Office app in the company. You know, they come to work trying to build all of those capabilities. And so over time, they will build all of those capabilities into the Office web apps. But at the same time, there's so much more you can do with a client application. You know, you can take advantage of that native code. You can use 4 gigs of RAM, whereas, you know, a browser using 4 gigs of RAM is generally a bad thing. There's a question up the back as well. There is, yes. Yes, as we change the customizations, we need to make sure that our change management policy informs you, tells you what the capability is, and provides training material as well. So we'll talk about how we do that in the service as well, because that's, you know, one of the concerns. You're moving off this kind of project-based approach where you just deploy it once, you wait 5 years, and then you deploy it again, and you wait, you know, 5 years, maybe 10 years, and you've built up such a delta in capability that it becomes a very big training project as well. what we're trying to move to in this model, that as we sort of dribble out features, it's no longer this big bang approach, that it's like, hey, use this one new feature this month. And it comes out in a much more gradual way, and it's much easier to control the messaging and those sorts of things. An example is that was the map app that I showed you before. You know, it is pretty big technology going in there, but at the same time, the impact to the user is that there's now a button that says map in the service as well. It's not as disruptive as perhaps waiting for a whole new release, having a whole new interface, whole new icons, colors, and those sorts of things as well. With Office Professional, you're getting the product as we released it in November 2012. Not for the clients. We have service packs, we have updates, but they're security fixes, performance fixes, and those sorts of things. They don't actually add features into the product. Yeah, that's right. Because when we're doing that, we have to test every different way that you'll deploy it. With the cloud option, you're getting a streaming version of the cloud. It's actually a virtualized bubble, so it's kind of entirely self-contained. So we can update that without affecting anything else as well. But great question on change management, which is my next topic. So a couple of things to think about with the service principles. The first is, you know, we want to deliver new features and new value. Oh, question. Sure. Yes. And we do today. You know, we don't have all the features of the clients in the web apps. It's a subset of capability. We generally aim for full fidelity, which means that your document will look exactly the same in the browser as it does in the client. But for editing, you know, there are some things that are quite different. So we don't want to make any breaking changes to the document, but we'll just hide certain capability that we're not able to do in the browser. Browser's good, but it's still a browser. It's still written in HTML5. It's not taking advantage of all the local storage, the local processing. It's not like running natively on your computer. It's actually running in JavaScript in your browser. So everything that we do is kind of built from the ground up from JavaScript, whereas on the Office client applications, we've had 30 years of making them run as fast as they can on Intel processors. So we're very, very tired with the PC. Or the Mac, even the Mac version does the same thing. You can make much more interactive, powerful applications. You can do 3D renderings and those sorts of things, which is just, at this stage, hard to do with HTML5. You know, over time, HTML6, HTML7, that feature is constantly being added into those platforms, and they'll constantly get better. But we shouldn't expect them both to be the same. And in many cases, the use cases start to differ as well. In the web app, there are certain things you'll want to do. In the client apps, there are certain things you'll prefer to do as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good question. So from a developer point of view, is there a difference between running on the online apps and running the traditional client apps? And the answer is no. So that developer model is essentially set. The new app model that we have with the Office Store and the application catalog running in SharePoint, all those sorts of things is kind of defined, cut out. We want to make sure that it's one app platform that crosses all of these different areas as well. What you may see down the line is that we're able to introduce new APIs earlier into Office 365. And we have the capability, but we absolutely don't want to deprecate anything. We don't want two platforms. And a lot of the stuff that goes into those traditional applications, it'll eventually come to those traditional applications when we do the major updates on those applications as well. Okay, so security comes first. Even when we add all of these features as well, they're not beta features, they're not anything like that. You know, we started to use the moniker preview when the features are optional, but they're by no means beta. They're feature complete, they're security tested, they're not a risk to your organization. And we also want to make sure that we respond to your feedback as well with how the service changes. If you don't like certain features, if you want ways of dealing with those certain features as well. And the great thing about this was that now we're sort of shipping those features monthly. It's a lot easier to get your feedback in. I've been at Microsoft 6 years now, and the way that we used to do product updates, if I take a look at something like Office 2007. We released Office 2007, and if anyone remembers Office 2007, it had the round jewel in the top menu bar. Everybody hated it. Right? No one knew how to use it. It used to flash red, and if you're, you know, an engineer, a red flashing button draws attention to it, so you want to click it. If you're anyone other than an engineer, a red flashing button sounds like danger, and you don't want to click it at all. So it was totally counterintuitive. We rolled that feature out. It was out there in Office 2007. All that negative feedback came back. But we weren't going to release the next product for 3 years. So it was a year of listening, getting the feedback, and then 2 years of building the product. And so even if you did have really critical feedback for us, it was very hard for us to turn very fast because our ship cycle, our release cycle, was this 3-year cycle. Now with the 30-day cycle, it's so much faster. Now we're doing 1 week of listening, 2 weeks of building, 1 week of preparing to ship, and those sorts of things. So it's a much faster cadence, and it means we can respond a lot more faster to product feedback as well. So that's something that we're really focusing on in this environment as well. And of course, we want to make sure that you see all of this stuff as well. So to give you a view of how we deliver kind of the innovation Office 365, we kind of divide these feature updates into two different areas, minor and major. So a minor update could be something like, hey, we're going to add a new trial to Botswana or a market that we hadn't offered Office 365 in. We want to add some deployment assistant tools. We want to add GoDaddy integration. So if you have a domain name already, you can easily click it and add it straight from your GoDaddy account or something like that. Or we want to make extra reliability improvements as well. These types of updates are actually largely invisible to the users, largely invisible to IT, and they largely represent, if at all, impact to IT. It's an additional option, an additional tool that comes available as well. So these we roll out very fast. Major changes are different. You know, major changes are things like, hey, now we have Office on iPhones. Now we have real-time co-authoring in the web apps. Now we have a support for a new highly critical standard, or now we have a totally new service into Office 365, whether that's Project Online, Project Lite, Rights Management Services, or any of that sort of thing coming through. We classify these as major features, and generally these are features that your admins need to take action on. We'll have to do something. We'll have to build some sort of change plan around as we roll these things out as well. We handle both of these in different manners. For the minor ones, we generally just slip out. If you go into the maintenance history view or the admin portal, you can see when these changes have happened, what they were doing, and those sorts of things. There's no downtime when these things happen. They just happen in the background automatically as well. The major ones, depending on the feature, will announce anywhere from 30 days in advance to 6 months in advance, depending on the impact that we expect to have as well. So the long-range view of this. In the past, we also had a 12-month window as well. And that 12-month window was for major changes to the environment that would happen as well. So what does this look like? Since we've released Office 365 back in 2011, this is the sort of features that we added. Just constantly little features are added to the product and improved over time. Some of these are tiny. Some of these are really important and big features as well. You know, when you look at some of these, multi-forest Active Directory, a complete new offering for government, increased the kiosk user from 500 megabytes to a gigabyte, and now it's up to two gigabytes as well. And it's only then that we released the next version of Office 365 in 2013, early last year. And then last year, we released a whole bunch of new capabilities as well. And I'm already out of date in this slide. I have to go and add like a 2014 version here now because we've had a month of new capabilities and new announcements happening to the service as well. So all of these features are just coming out into the platform at a constant time. It changes the way you have to think about these applications. No longer is deploying a new capability like a capital expense. It's no longer a project. It's actually an operational thing. It's actually something that goes on constantly. You never stop rolling out changes. You never stop adoption work. You never stop notifying your users. You may start to do it on a monthly cadence and say, hey, here's some new capabilities we added to your environment. You may do a number of different things like that, but it's just something that keeps going, which is is a big difference to IT. Luckily, we've freed you up from running all that horrible hardware, so you've got a job to do. I don't think so. I think it's much less overwhelming than it has been in the past. And users, you know, need to use the product. We don't want to interfere with that. Disruptive changes, we want to make sure we handle very differently to some of these minor things that just creep into the product over time. But when you think about the difference going from 3 years, the amount of things that we can build in 3 years is very different from the amount of things we can build in a month. The amount of impact we can have in a month, like while we have great engineers, I don't want to say that we can actually cause something in a month that would cause that much disruption and that much interruption from their workflow. The idea is that these changes are small, off by default, minimized and invisible to the user, and represent improvements to the service. It doesn't change the way they use the products as well. So a couple of things that happen. For disruptive changes, you notified 12 months before having to make those changes as well. When we did some disruptive changes in 2013, when we first released this round of Office 365 updates, we actually gave people 12 months to opt into the new capabilities. So they couldn't get them straight away. And that posed challenges because people wanted to use the iPhone apps. They wanted the iPad app straight away. Well, we have to move your Office 365 before you get those sorts of capabilities. And so people need to opt into that kind of new treadmill of features coming up as well. Generally, we'll announce that through our Office 365 blog. We'll video it. We'll make a whole bunch of announcements around it. We'll encourage our support teams, our sales teams, our partners to notify all of the customers and those sorts of things as well. We've introduced into the Office 365 service a message center, which outlines all of these things as well. And even has a button that an admin has to click and accept that they've seen that update. They know it's coming as well. We're trying to cover as many bases as possible to see all these sorts of things as well. The other thing is this is a highly configurable and scalable service as well. So even though there's features that we're adding, there's also features that your users will be adding to their own service as well. Using the app model, using customizations, using the Office Store to add their own features into the product as well. So those changes you obviously need to manage yourselves as well. You can mix and match all those different things. You can take some of the out-of-the-box project stuff, but you may want to augment that with a Gantt chart, 3D Gantt chart visualization tool or something like that you pull from the Office Store. Or you may have inbuilt Office 365 workflow, but you want to have some workflows using the new Nintex workflow tool inside of SharePoint and all those sorts of things as well. So mixing and matching all of those features together really makes your environment unique. And while we'll update all of our changes as well, you have to understand that the developers, either your developers or the developers of the apps you buy, will also update their apps periodically as well, and they'll be always up to date in your application as well. And that's really the focus. You know, there's a whole bunch of things you can do with Office 365, a whole bunch of capabilities. What we're trying to do is just free you up from worrying about the hardware, the infrastructure, the initial setup, the architecture design sessions, the taxonomies, and all of that sort of stuff that has kept IT guys like me gainfully employed for many, many years. It's a change. It's new. But at the same time, there is still a very important role for IT to understand these capabilities and to focus much more on the users. Now we have to be very user-centric. We have to pick up new skills like change management, adoption, training, you know, tracking, vendor management, reporting, all these sorts of things that are coming on board now. We need to learn how to manage. You're no longer a storage guy that runs around with hard drives and SANs and networks. Now you need to be an archiving guy. You need to understand, what do I save? What do I delete? What are the regulations? Which teams need different policies? The CEO probably needs a very different archiving policy from the front desk secretary or someone like that. You know, the CFO may need certain policies, may need to have the right to send credit cards out over the internet if she wants or something like that. But you don't want to let the salesperson do that on the front line. So all of these sorts of things now, really that business design is kind of the new role of IT, to focus on that and focus on the users to make sure they can use all these technologies as well. So it's great, it's easy, it's fantastic. There's an initial hump, and the initial hump is getting from where you are today into the Office 365 environment. We focus a lot on deployment. Jeff up the back has a session at 2 o'clock. We'll be talking specifically about how to migrate to Office 365, how to bring the stuff you have today into Office 365 and get set up and going. And Jeff, you'll also talk about a lot of the change management assets that we have that we'll provision into the Office 365 tenant so that you can have your own intranet portal for all the training material that you may need as well. Thank you very much for listening. That's the end of my presentation. Cheers.